I drove our Chevy between my office and his because I didn't want to be seen walking around with a crowbar. I parked outside the mortuary entrance and waited. The guy showed up inside 5 minutes, walking from the direction of the O Club. I probably interrupted his dessert, or maybe even his main course. I slid out to meet him and leaned back in and took the crowbar out of the back seat. He glanced at it, led me inside. He seemed to understand what I wanted to do. He unlocked his office and hit the lights and unlocked his drawer, opened it and lifted out the crowbar that had killed Carbone, laid it on his desk. I laid the borrowed specimen next to it, pulled the tissue paper off, lined it up at the same angle. It was exactly identical. "Are there wide variations?" the pathologist asked. "With crowbars?" "More than you'd think," I said. "I just had a big crowbar lesson." "These two look the same." "They are the same. They're peas in a pod. Count on it. They're custom-made. They're unique in all the world." "Did you ever meet Carbone?" "Very briefly," I said. "What was his posture like?" "In what way?" "Did he stoop?" I thought back to the dim interior of the lounge bar, to the hard light in the parking lot. Shook my head. "Carbone wasn't tall enough to stoop," I said. "He was a wiry guy, solid, stood up pretty straight, kind of on the balls of his feet. He looked athletic." "Okay. Why?" "It was a downward blow. Not a downward chop, but a horizontal swing that dipped as it hit. Maybe it was just below horizontal. Carbone was 70 inches tall. The wound was 65 inches off the ground, assuming he wasn't stooping. But it was delivered from above, so his attacker was tall."
"You told us that already," I said.
"No, I mean tall," he said. "I've been working on it, mapping it out. The guy had to be 6'4 or 6'5.
"Like me," I said.
"And as heavy as you, too. Not easy to break a skull as badly as that."
I thought back to the crime scene. It had been pocked with small hummocks of dead grass, and there were wrist-thick branches here and there on the ground, but it was basically a flat area. No way one guy could have been standing higher than the other. No way of assuming a relative height difference when there really wasn't one.
6'4 or 6'5, I said. "You prepared to go to bat on that? In court?"
"It was a training accident," I said. "We're not going to court. This is just between you and me. Am I wasting my time looking at people less than 6'4" tall?"
The doctor breathed in, breathed out. 6'3", he said, "to be on the safe side, to allow a margin for experimental error. I'd go to bat on 6'3", count on it."
"Okay," I said.
He shooed me out the door and hit the lights and locked up again. Summer was sitting behind my desk when I got back, doing nothing. She was through with the gender analysis. It hadn't taken her long. The strength lists were comprehensive and accurate and alphabetical, like most Army paperwork.
33 men, she said. 23 enlisted, 10 officers.
Who are they?
Little bit of everything. Delta and Ranger leave was completely canceled, but they had evening passes. Carbone himself was in and out on the first, obviously.
We can cross him off.
Okay, 32 men, she said. The pathologist is one of them.
We can take him out, too.
31 then, she said. And Vassal and Coomer are still in there. In and out on the first, and in again on the fourth at 7 o'clock.
Take him out, I said. They were eating dinner, fish and steak.
29, she said. 22 enlisted, 7 officers.
Okay, I said. Now go to Post HQ and pull their medical records.
Why?
To find out how tall they are.
Can't do that for the driver Vaselin Coomer had on New Year's Day, Major Marshall. He was a visitor. His records won't be there.
He wasn't here the night Carbone died, I said. So you can take him out, too.
28,
she said. So go pull 28 sets of records, I said. She slid me a slip of white paper. I picked it up. It was the one I'd written 973 on, our original suspect pool.
We're making progress,
she said. I nodded. She smiled and stood up, walked out the door. I took her place behind the desk. The chair was warm from her body. I savored the feeling until it went away. Then I picked up the phone, asked my sergeant to get the post quartermaster on the line. It took her a few minutes to find him. I figured she'd had to drag him out of the mess hall. I figure I'd just ruined his dinner, too, as well as the pathologist's. But then, I hadn't eaten anything yet myself.
Yes, sir,
the guy said. He sounded a little annoyed. I got a question, Chief, I said. Something only you'll know.
Like what?
Average height and weight for a male U.S. Army soldier. The guy said nothing, but I felt his annoyance fade away. The Quartermaster Corps buys millions of uniforms a year. And twice as many boots, all on a budget. So you can bet it knows the tail of the tape to the nearest half inch and the nearest half ounce. It can't afford not to, literally. And it loves to show off its specialized knowledge.
No problem, the guy said. Male adult population age 20 to 50 as a whole in America goes 5'9½ and 178. We're overrepresented with Hispanics by comparison with the nation as a whole, which brings our median height down one whole inch to 5'8½. We train pretty hard, which brings our median weight up 3 pounds to 181, muscle being generally heavier than fat.
Those are this year's figures?
Last year's, he said. This year's only a few days old.
What's the spread in height?
What are you looking for?
How many guys have we got 6'3" or better?
1 in 10,
he said.
The army as a whole, maybe 90,000. Call it a Super Bowl crowd. On a post this size, maybe 120. Call it a half-empty airplane.
Okay, Chief, I said. Thanks. I hung up. 1 in 10. Summer was going to come back with 28 medical charts. 9 out of 10 of them were going to be for guys too small to worry about. So out of 28, if we were lucky, only 2 of them would need looking at. 3 if we were unlucky. 2 or 3, down from 973. Making progress. I looked at the clock. 8:30. I smiled to myself. Shit happens, Willard, I thought. Shit happened for sure, but it happened to us, not Willard. Averages and medians played their little arithmetic tricks, and Summer came back with 28 charts, and all 28 of them were for short guys. Tallest among them was a marginal 6'1", and he was a reed-thin 160 pounds, and he was a padre. Once when I was a kid, we lived for a month in an off-post bungalow somewhere. It had no dining table. My mother called people and had one delivered. It came packed flat in a carton. I tried to help her put it together. All the parts were there. There was a laminated tabletop and 4 chrome legs and 4 big steel bolts. We laid them out on the floor in the dining nook. The top, 4 legs, 4 bolts. But there was no way to fit them together. No way at all. It was some kind of an inexplicable design. Nothing would join up. We knelt side by side and worked on it. We sat cross-legged on the floor with the dust bunnies and the cockroaches. The smooth chrome was cold in my hands. The edges were rough where the laminate was shaped on the corners. We couldn't put it together. Joe came in and tried and failed. My dad tried and failed. We ate in the kitchen for a month. We were still trying to put that table together when we moved out. Now I felt like I was wrestling with it all over again. Nothing went together. Everything looked good at first, and then everything stalled and died.
The crowbar didn't walk in by itself,
Summer said.
One of those 28 names brought it in. Obviously. It can't have gotten here any other way.
I said nothing.
Want dinner?
She said. I think better when I'm hungry, I said.
We've run out of things to think about.
I nodded, gathered the 28 medical charts together and piled them neatly. Put Summer's original list of 33 names on top. 33 minus Carbone, because he didn't bring the crowbar in himself and commit suicide with it. Minus the pathologist, because he wasn't a convincing suspect, and because he was short, and because his practice swings with the crowbar had been weak. Minus Vassal and Coomer and their driver, Marshall, because their alibis were too good. Vassal and Coomer had been stuffing their faces, and Marshall hadn't even come at all. Why wasn't Marshall here, I said. Summer nodded.
That's always bothered me. It's like Vassal and Coomer had something to hide from him.
All they did was eat dinner.
But Marshall must have been right there at Kramer's funeral with him. So they must have specifically told him not to drive him here, like a positive order to get out of the car and stay home.
I nodded, pictured the long line of black government sedans at Arlington National Cemetery under a leaden January sky. Pictured the ceremony, the folding of the flag, the salute from the riflemen, the shuffling procession back to the cars, bare-headed men with their chins ducked into their collars against the cold, maybe snow in the air. I pictured Marshall holding the Mercury's rear doors, for Vassal first, then for Coomer. He must have driven them back to the Pentagon lot, and then gotten out and watched Coomer move up into the driver's seat. "We should talk to him," I said. "Find out exactly what they told him, what kind of reason they gave him. It must have been a slightly awkward moment. A blue-eyed boy like that must have felt a little excluded." I picked up the phone and spoke to my sergeant, asked her to get a number from Major Marshall. Told her he was a 12-corps staffer based at the Pentagon. She said she'd get back to me. Summer and I sat quiet and waited. I gazed at the map on the wall. I figured we should take the pin out of Columbia. It distorted the picture. Brubaker hadn't been killed there. He'd been killed somewhere else. North, south, east, or west.
"Are you going to call Willard?"
Summer asked me. "Probably," I said. "Tomorrow, maybe."
"Not before midnight?"
"I don't want to give him the satisfaction."
"That's a risk."
"I'm protected," I said.
"Might not last forever."
"Doesn't matter. I'll have Delta Force coming after me soon. That'll make everything else seem kind of academic."
"Call Willard tonight," she said. "That'd be my advice."
I looked at her.
"As a friend,"
she said.
"AWOL's a big deal. No point in making things worse."
"Okay," I said.
"Do it now," she said. "Why not?"
"Okay," I said again. I reached out for the phone, but before I could get my hand on it, my sergeant put her head in the door. She told us Major Marshall was no longer based in the United States. His temporary detached duty had been prematurely terminated. He'd been recalled to Germany. He'd been flown out of Andrews Air Force Base late in the morning of the 5th of January. "Whose orders?" I asked her.
"General Vassal's," she said.
"Okay," I said. She closed the door.
"The 5th of January,"
Summer said. "The morning after Carbone and Brubaker died," I said.
"He knows something."
"He wasn't even here."
"Why else would they hide him away afterwards?"
"It's a coincidence."
"You don't like coincidences."
I nodded. "Okay," I said. "Let's go to Germany." No way was Willard about to authorize any foreign expeditions, so I walked over to the provost marshal's office and took a stack of travel vouchers out of the company clerk's desk. I carried them back to my own office and signed them all with my name on the CO lines and respectable forgeries of Leon Garber's signature on the authorized by lines.
"We're breaking the law,"
Summer said. "This is the Battle of Kursk," I said. "We can't stop now." She hesitated. "Your choice," I said. "In or out. No pressure from me." She said nothing.
These vouchers won't come back for a month or two, I said. By then, either Willard will be gone or we will. We got nothing to lose.